Well, we have finally reached the finish line of 2020. What, all things considered, Derek, has been a pretty darn good year for the Padres and their fans, wouldn't you say?
Yes. This is one of the bright spots of a very, very odd and hopefully infinitely forgettable, aside from the Padres.
Exactly. Let's see, the best winning percentage in team history, albeit through 60 games. First playoff appearance since 06. First winning season since 10. First playoff series victory since 98. They had Silver Sluggers and Gold Glover, MVP, Cy Young, Rookie of the Year, Manager of the Year. Am I missing anything?
We'll see. DJ should have been up for, he was finalist for Executive of the Year, we would assume, although they don't actually announce finalists for that.
Well, despite everything that they accomplished, AJ Preller still GMing as though he's worried his head is going to roll. And we couldn't be more fired up about it.
It's not. This, I tell you what, man, this week was one of the strangest, most awesome weeks that as a Padres fan I can remember. It's like, it kind of started, I know it's weird, it's like we were talking in the last couple of podcasts, like, oh, sure, what would it take to go out and get Blake Snell? And sometimes we do exercises like that just as a ha-ha what if, you know? And then I remember I heard all this stuff about you, Darvish, and I'm like, you know what? There's not much going on today. I'm going to do a whole story for our 11 and 6 and 11 o'clock news about why do you, Darvish, would be a cool idea for the Padres, but ha-ha, is ever actually going to happen. And then you get in this one flurry of time, everything goes, and then you add Ha-Seong Kim, and you're going, what is this, real life?
It's real life. It's real. I wonder if AJ just has visions of Ron Fowler. Like, whenever he gets complacent, if he just hears Ron's voice, like, we were an embarrassment, you know?
I wonder if he ever, like, has a down moment to even think that much.
Yeah, that's true. Because as we've heard, the guy does not sleep, and that has been on full display. Thanks for listening to the On Fire podcast. Last edition of, again, what has been a banner year for the Padres. We appreciate you being along for the ride with us, with Derek Togerson, as always. I am Darnay Tripp. Before we get too far down the road on this conversation of what Preller pulled off this week, I want to show some love for OGs. Of course, restaurants having a difficult time right now, and OG's certainly on that list. So think of them for your takeout needs. You can order them, takeout, delivery directly from OG's or by visiting OG's.com. Give your local OG's a call to place your order. You can purchase gift cards. And of course, as we've mentioned many times before and are very excited about, you can add to-go alcohol to your order. OG's is doing growler fills as well. So thanks to OG's for all that they have continued to do for us on what has been a difficult year for them, no doubt. Wow, what a few days. I was thinking back to how this all began, and you'd mention it, like we had discussed this possibility, and we had batted around trade ideas and what would it take, primarily for Snell. I don't think we had really mentioned Darvish much on the podcast, but Snell brought him up a couple few episodes back, and it seemed like it was a real possibility. Did I break the news to you? A buddy of mine texted me the tweet from Jeff Passan, and it was literally minutes before we went on for football night in San Diego. And then I immediately texted you. And I think you said, don't play with my emotions or something like that.
Yeah. I said, don't tease me.
Don't tease me.
Yeah. I said, don't tease me. Because I had been working on doing stuff for the football show and then doing stuff for Sports Rap. And I was, you know, kind of focused on, you know, the Colts and Steelers game and everything that I was, you know, working on that day. And then you sent me that and I was like, stop. Don't just hang on a minute here. Okay. I'm going to stop doing what I'm supposed to be doing and start looking into this now. And hopefully this becomes what I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah. I was, my head was in a completely different place when we started that show, the first couple minutes or so.
Go back and watch it on DVR. You can see me dancing in the quad box.
Well, I knew off the top, usually we give our headlines for the week. I knew your headline was going to have nothing to do with football.
It was going to have something to do with, like I said, I had a whole song ready to go. on how Jared Goff is just not very good and the Rams are in trouble. And it was a whole want to build a snowman thing because my wife and I watched Frozen recently and we were going to talk like it was going to be really, really fun and show off my horrible singing voice. And I'm like, scrap that, dude. No, we're going straight all in on this.
I'm thankful to AJ Preller for sparing us of that.
As is everyone else, yes.
I do want to say this week has made it a bit tricky for the two of us to use the words of AJ Preller to line up on one of these. And we've done emergency pods in the past. Would have loved to have done an emergency pod on this topic. Was just tough to kind of get that done this week. And we didn't want the week to go by without touching on the subject because obviously, one of the biggest Padres stories of the year. And it was cool having people call me and both of us out on Twitter. I had people reach out on Instagram like, dude, where's that? Where's the emergency podcast? This is big stuff. And you're right. And apologies for not getting it done sooner. But
it's the holiday season. We do have families. But yes, it's nice to know that people are hankering for the content.
Yeah, absolutely. So here it is. Better late than never. And again, I appreciate you all listening and certainly love the enthusiasm. Derek, I mean, you've spent a number of years covering the Padres, probably thinking about like the prospect of an opening day starter with like a little bit of dread and apprehension, like not a ton of excitement. Whereas like beginning with last year, it was Paddock and Richards. And now it's like, is it the incumbent Lamet? Is it Snell? Is it the Cy Young runner up this year? The complete like landscape of this team has just changed so dramatically. Like even going back to the beginning of this year when we're talking to people and they're like, yeah, we think maybe they're a playoff team. And then they come out and play great baseball. Guys reach their potential. Lamet puts up a Cy Young caliber season. Jace Tingler is the real deal. Jake Cronenworth surprises. Trent Grisham is great. And all of a sudden, like this is a real team.
And Manny Machado looks like he was with the Baltimore Orioles. Fernando Tatis Jr. takes the step forward that we hoped he was going to take forward. Mm-hmm. Will Myers remembers how talented he is. And then you lose Tommy Pham for most of the year, and they still had a great season. That was supposed to be one of their marquee additions over last offseason. It could not have gone any better until the very end when they had all the injury issues.
Yeah, exactly. And that kind of crystallized the need for more starting pitching. And then I think, the experience of seeing the Dodgers and, last year they go out and get Mookie Betts and you're like, does this team really need more top flight MVP caliber talent? And that's what ultimately got them over the hump. And I think it's clear that AJ Preller saw that and I don't know, maybe it's making a leap to assume that was the impetus of these moves, but you got to think that motivated him a little bit to see what they did, to see how a talent like Mookie Betts allowed a World Series caliber team to actually win a World Series. Like the Padres roster was good. Mike Petriello, who we've had on the podcast, like Fangraphs, MLB.com had them as the second best roster in baseball, but you still had the Dodgers out there. And there was a clear need for more talent, more pitching. And who knows if the gap is completely narrowed? It's a heck of a lot closer than it was during that 3-game series in October.
Yes, there's no question it is. Remember, the Dodgers needed to make a big comeback in the NLCS against the Braves. And then, even with Mookie Betts, they had issues with starting pitching depth. Now, they do get David Price back, of course. And it looks like, Clayton Kershaw is back to being Clayton Kershaw again after going through, a couple of off seasons of working with the big labs up in Washington and figuring out how to get himself back on track. But I think you hit the nail on the head, but there's another component here. He absolutely has to. He has to. Everyone in baseball has to look at the Dodgers, especially if you're in the same division, and say, how do we slay that dragon? Because they're not going away anytime soon. They're not going to come back to the pack. You have to go get them. So that's one of the reasons that AJ Preller did all this. The other one was when I was talking to Jace Tingler, I believe it was last week, early in the week, I asked him, what do you do with your starting pitching depth? Just exactly what we've talked about on this exact same podcast, because you don't know how long guys will be able to go next year, coming off a shortened season where you threw, I mean, most pitchers threw 50 to 60 innings if they're starters. And then you have that kind of traditional, you go up 150%, you know, if you're coming back from an injury or if you're building up a young arm or whatever it may be. Now, established guys like, you know, Blake Snell, Yu Darvish, that they're probably not going to have as much of an issue, even though Snell's workload has been managed really his entire career with the Rays. But if you get through 50, 55 innings, where can you go from here? Can you double up and go to, can you triple up and go to 150? What's that going to do to the arm moving forward and risk of injury? And Jay said, we don't know. We have no idea. Nobody's ever been through this before. So they're looking for depth. And I think really more than anything, that's what these moves were for. I know losing Patino stinks. I think that kid, and we've talked to him before, darn it. He's a wonderful kid. Mm-hmm. I mean, great personality, driven. I hope he becomes a modern day Juan Marichal, you know, without hitting people in the head with bats. I hope he comes and has a tremendous career because he's a good, good kid. But that might happen in a couple of years. You're getting a guy who now is the guy. Cole Wilcox, questions about if he can be a starter or not. He's probably a couple of years away anyway. So what they did was they added two absolute horses at the top of the rotation. And then they held on to the vast majority of their major league ready guys. Because you're going to need 9, 10 starting pitchers this year. So he was looking at how do we fill all these innings when we know we can't ask a guy to go, especially if they expect to go deep into October, which they expect to do. And they have the expanded playoffs, which Major League Baseball is going to be stupid, even more dumb than we make fun of them for possibly being if they don't do that again. Mm-hmm. You're going to need a lot of depth. So they kept Maury home. They kept Gore, who should be ready. They kept Michel Baez, who you can stretch out. They kept Joey Lucchese, who was always there as a fallback. They kept the most of the big league ready depth on the starting rotation to be able to go through what they anticipate being a 162 game season. That's the other part of where I think AJ was coming from with doing all this. And I think it just is working out absolutely brilliant. Losing Zach Davies sucks, right? He was a guy we really enjoyed here, but is he going to be have the same impact on a rotation that a Yu Darvish does? Absolutely not.
We'll hear from AJ Preller. We'll hear from Blake Snell later on this afternoon. We're recording on Thursday morning, as we typically do. Padres are actually making Yu Darvish available. So won't have that for this episode.
So that'll be a happy New Year's Eve.
Yeah. So excited to hear what Yu has to say. And, but again, we'll pass along some snippets from Preller and Snell's time with reporters from earlier this week. How, you know, we've spent so much time talking about with Snell, the return. And I think Darvish was the most stunning because you get a real like major league arm in Zach Davies and a guy who, you know, I'd love to see him continue to pitch the way he did in 2020. He was phenomenal for the Padres. Certainly a great surprise. I don't think it's this simple, but AJ Preller kind of flipped Eric Lauer for Yu Darvish in kind of an indirect way.
You can totally say that.
They get Zach Davies, he's lights out, and that gives him some ammo in the Darvish trade. But the Darvish trade was so interesting, and I got some friends that are Cubs fans that were like, what are we doing? Well, how is this all we're getting back for Yu Darvish? I'm curious what your reaction was, because you mentioned Patino and obviously expected to be a big part of the future, a very highly regarded prospect. Francisco Mejia, writing was kind of on the wall. Blake Hunt, a guy we didn't know too much about, and there was enough kind of in his way, just kind of with
Camposano. And Austin Nola being so controllable for so long. I watched a couple of Tin Caps games with Blake Hunt, and the kid's impressive. He's a long ways away, though. He was a second-round pick, 17, out of a modern-day high school, not the one in San Diego, the one the one up in Santa Ana, the big basketball school. He's big, shows good raw power, kind of hasn't tapped into it yet. I think he's going to be – they're looking at as a guy who might be even a better project than Mejia is. So, I mean, Blake Hunt, I really like Blake Hunt. These other kids, we had never seen them before. Talking about the four for the Darvish trade. Owen Casey was a draft pick this year. So, AJ traded 33% of his draft class from 2020 in these two deals, which is interesting.
But he's kind
of a toolsy kind of raw power outfielder. But it's three teenagers and a 20-year-old. And two of them are outfielders, and two of them are shortstops. And if you look at it, the Padres are not going to have a need at shortstop anytime soon. They were able to hold on to Tucapita Marcano, which is amazing. And they have, you know, of course, they have C.J. Abrams, who also is a shortstop. Like, they're loaded at shortstop. So I made a joke a few years ago when A.J. was kind of bringing all these prospects in with all these trades. Remember Pokemon Go?
Yes.
The game? Yeah, I said he's playing Pokemon Go with prospects because you got to get them all. And that's really what he did. So he got all these prospects, and he built this system with such ridiculous depth. And he continued to do that he's now able to say, okay, we built this all up. Now we're going to flip all these guys for what we need to win right now. This is basically the equivalent of what, like, the Astros did when they needed to go out and get Justin Verlander to win a World Series, right? They needed that last piece. They had the system nice and thick. They're able to go out and get Verlander. Or when the Royals needed Johnny Cueto to win the World Series, the system was nice and big, and they went, okay, go out and get that guy at the trade deadline. They just did it in the offseason this year.
Yeah.
And it's just been awesome to watch because, and the prospect rankings are what they are, but none of those guys are in the top 10 in the Darvish trade. No, not a single one of them, which is ridiculous. For the fact that AJ was able to do this without touching Gore or Abrams or Camposano or Hassel or Head, who are kind of the guys that we keep hearing about and getting the rave reviews, or Ryan Weathers, who came out of nowhere to throw really well in the National League Division Series after never pitching above, you know, low A Fort Wayne, and throwing really well against the eventual world champion Dodgers. Not as another guy I didn't even mention with the pitching depth. He's another guy who's going to be in the mix for being able to make starts this year. To not touch any of those guys and to add Blake Snell and Yu Darvish shows that what other people around baseball think of the Padres system, of these guys are absolutely freaking loaded from top to bottom. Well, how much more depth do they have after this? Well, they're going to have to rebuild it. But what we've seen is they're able to rebuild it pretty fast, especially with their ability to draft and sign guys. And then the player development part of it has been tremendous too. It's almost like we never hear anything about, like, things working, right? Like, oh my God, that worked. Like, it's almost like he went MacGyver on this whole rebuild thing, and you're going, holy, that worked. What do you mean you can take a stick of chewing gum and a battery and turn it into a nuclear weapon? That's amazing. That's kind of what he did. Holy bleep, it worked. This is so cool.
Kyle Glazer, friend of the podcast, made a couple good points on Twitter that when, and this was, I think, primarily about the prospects that got shipped in the Yu Darvish deal, their rankings aren't that high in the Padres system, but that's because they're in the Padres system. That's because they're in one of the most loaded, farm systems in baseball. And so these guys would be more highly touted, more talked about, more highly regarded, not to mention the fact that they are pretty young, but if they're in other organizations and just saying, look, there's some talent there, you know, they aren't all, I'm not going to use the term that Blake Snell used about the Xavier Edwards deal for Tommy Pham, but they aren't necessarily that kind of prospect. They are now, as somebody pointed out on Twitter, you are until you aren't. But there is some promise and some potential there. But when we were talking about a potential Snell deal, I mean, it looked something like Patino, Morejon, Campusano. I think that's what Eno Saris put out there originally. It was like something in that neighborhood. And, you know, it's instead of Morejon, it's Cole Wilcox, a guy who was, you know, a steal in the draft that they obviously paid for. Mejia, expendable. Catching prospect, expendable. I mean, both these trades, if you'd shown us the blueprint of these deals at any point during this offseason, I think we're all like, yeah, you make that trade 10 times out of 10.
Yeah, and you want to deal from a position of strength, right? What's great is the Padres have almost nothing but positions of strength, which is really, really cool to see. And you saw the like you said, the depth, the absolute depth of this system. I'm checking the Cubs updated prospect list. Preciado, 10. Casey, 11. Mania, 16. Santana, 17. So they're all higher ranked in the Cubs system than they were in the Padres system.
Yeah. Real quick, I thought about you when I was kind of figuring out what I wanted to do for the TV side yesterday, because you're always good at lending some perspective, like what's the history, what got us to this place? And I was thinking about that with the Padres, like what put AJ Preller in position to make the moves that he did? And this could easily be an hour, 2 hour conversation, but if we were to do like a concise version of that, like in a couple minutes, wrap it up nice and neat, like from, you know, that 2015 season on to the James Shields deal, to the Chris Paddock deal, to obviously the arrival of Tatis, Machado and Hosmer, but then with the way Preller stacked the system with both the minor league talent, guys like Gore and Patino, I'm hitting on those high draft picks, and then the Grisham and Cronenworth deals, and all the deadline deals this year to bring in 9 major league caliber players that gave them more trade ammo for this. I think that's what is so cool to kind of reflect on. Like, this didn't just happen overnight. Like, Preller's been playing the long game now going back 5 years, and it's all come to fruition. And all the excitement about, like, the minor league guys, like, that was real, like, for their arrival, and a lot of those guys will still make it and have already, and more will continue to have an impact. But it wasn't just about those guys arriving and being really good. It's about those guys giving them the flexibility and the ammo to make these trades, right?
Exactly. It's stacking the system like we've been talking about with everything. And it's to be as concise as I am capable. Here we go. You go back to 2015, where they go absolutely bonkers and they trade for Will Myers and they trade for and Will Middlebrooks and, you know, Ryan Hannigan, and then flip him for Middlebrooks. And then you go out and you trade for Matt Kemp, and you go out and you get Justin Upton, and you go out and you get Craig Kimbrell. They did all that, and they were saying, everybody saying, well, they're trading the whole system away. Well, I think what AJ looked at, he looked at the system and said, the system's not that good. All right. So what we're going to do is we're going to excite the fan base. And that's exactly what they did. The Padres drew 3 million fans in 2015 for the first time since 2007, which was the last time that they went to a game 163. And Matt Holliday still hasn't touched the plate. Sorry, I'm required by law to say that every time I bring up 2007.
Drink.
Yeah, precisely. So you ignite the fan base, right? And you kind of show the Padres fans, the San Diego fans will show up if you show us we're trying. You know, and I've been saying this for years. If you just show us you're trying, we will be there. You don't even have to win. You just have to show us that you're invested. We learned that with the Chargers for years. Nobody would go because they knew the Spanos family wasn't trying. You know, nobody would go in the early 2010s because knew Jeff Morad wasn't trying. And John Morris had stopped trying because of his own personal problems, right? So then when they show they were trying, oh, we're in, we're back. And they made a lot of cash that year. And they were able to take that and then go, okay, listen, this isn't working. I think AJ wanted that to work, but it didn't. But what it able to do, it kind of, as we've talked about, it stuffed the coffers a little bit. So now they have some operating capital. And then 2016 shows up and they start, you know, trading away a bunch of the guys who they had. You know, they get rid of Matt Kemp basically for Oliveras on a salary dump, you know, more or less, which is fine. To get rid of Melvin Upton for, you know, Edward Olivares, who then you turn into, I forget which trade with the Royals he was in, either Rosenthal or Hill, but you turn him into a reliable reliever who helps you get to the playoffs. So you start building that way, but they signed 54 international free agents, upwards of $90 million on the international market. And those guys, I mean, you know about Jorge Oña, who's still in the system and showed he can hit at the end of last year, Adrian Morejon, Michelle Baez, Ronald Bolaños, so you flip over to the Royals. Luis Almanzar, Gabriel Arias, you trade to the Indians as part of the Mike Clevenger deal. You know, Jason Rosario, you send over to Boston in the Mitchell Moreland deal. You draft Hudson Potts after you don't re-sign Justin Upton, and you get that compensatory draft pick because you gave Upton the qualifying offer. You send him along with Rosario over to Boston in the Mitch Moreland trade. You sign for some reason less than $200,000 out of Colombia, that kid named Luis Patino, Cupido Marcano. You start throwing all this money around here, and then just all those guys just in the 2016 international signing period, those guys. And look what they turned into. So it was that that really sparked this whole thing. They put so much of an influx into this system, some of a young talent's infusion, that they were able to go, okay, now we're going to go out and we're going to get Josh Naylor, right? And then we're going to send Josh Naylor over for
Mike Clevenger.
We're going to get Chris Paddock, because we know we liked that kid when we were scouting him, we wanted to draft him, we never had a chance to, so go out and get him now, you know, when you know he's going to be something. How, I mean, he was, like I said, I think, I forget who it was who we had on the podcast, but we remember told the story talking to AJ when they made the James Shields trade to the White Sox. And Eric Johnson was kind of the big name guy, or not big name, he was a major league starter at the time. We all thought the salary dump. And I saw Fernando Tatis Jr.'s name on there. I was like, who is this kid? So I got on the interwebs and looked up some video of him. And he had that, at the time, he had that leg kick and looked like his dad. Like the swing looked like his dad. And so I asked AJ, I'm like, so tell me about this Tatis kid, you know, it kind of looks like his dad with that swing. What do you like about him? And he kind of just gives this little grin and goes, yeah, we like him. We think he's got some potential. And you know, AJ will normally kind of just kind of go off on, yeah, he's got this, he's kind of tools. Mm-hmm. He didn't say much. And I was kind of going, oh, okay. Huh. That's interesting.
You want to show his hand.
Right. And I'm thinking now, I'm like, you sandbagging son of a gun. You freaking knew you had just fleeced the White Sox of that. Because when he was at the Rangers, they were trying to sign him too. And they didn't get to. But so he's had his hand and his eye on some of these guys since they were 14 years old. It's incredible how he was able to do all of this at one time. But it was that international signing period in 2016. That was the genesis of all of this. And that was really able to be done because of the excitement and the extra money that came in from 2015. So I think that's really the big bang of this entire thing.
Yeah. Well, you kept it under 20 minutes, so I'm impressed.
I'm working on it.
And Olivares, he created so much excitement early in the season, and I feel like he's been gone for so long. I just assumed he was part of the Hill deal. He was part of the Rosenthal deal,
at
the deadline. Let's get to some of what AJ Preller and Blake Snell had to say. Excuse me as I kind of get my computer situated here. To touch on obviously a bunch of topics. Let's just start with Snell's reaction to joining the Padres. Obviously known as the most exciting team in baseball, and just like Mike Clevenger before him, Snell, despite processing his exit from the Rays and not expecting, to part with them at this point, pretty fired up about joining the team like the Padres.
Well, they're super exciting. They got a team that, you know, plays with a lot of fun. They're swaggy. They can swing the bat. That's the first thing I'm going to say. They can swing it. You know, you got Machado, Tatis, Hosmer, Will. You got Cronenworth. You got Tommy Pham. How can I forget Tommy? That's my dog. So, I mean, it's just all through the lineup. And I still got to get to know these guys and, you know, see the whole lineup that we actually do have everybody in there. And then I'm excited, you know, I get to meet Nola here soon. So I'm excited to meet him. Start to talk to him about, you know, just, you know, ideas that I have, he has, and build that relationship. So, I mean, from that end, I'm excited that, you know, I got guys that can hit, but they can also play defense. And then, I'm just excited to really meet everyone, meet the starting staff, meet the bullpen pitchers. It's a lot that, you know, is going through my head, but this team can play, and, you know, we're going to be chasing a World Series, which is obviously the most exciting, you know, piece to this whole thing. It's exciting, man. It's fun to see, you know, they're going all out. They want to win. They know what they have. They know the talent that's here. They know what they need to win. And they're going and getting it. So it's something for me that, you know, I'm super excited about. And, you know, I'm just very thankful that, you know, they put their trust in, you know, shipping prospects out for me to be the guy to, you know, help them, you know, win a World Series.
Swaggy was the word of the day. And
he likes that word a lot.
Our colleague Todd Strain came up with a great nickname, Swaggy B. I can get behind that.
Hasn't that one been taken?
Swaggy P.
Oh, yeah. They all sound the same.
of course, being Nick Young. Swaggy B. I like, you know, he was really interesting. I wasn't able to be on the call, but he was really, just listening to it after the fact, Really engaging, kind of fun to listen to. Learned he, like myself, bad with names. He's got a 4-month-old puppy. He's got Rosetta Stone. He had a catcher with the Rays that he was working on his Spanish with, and that's something he wants to pick up, and he wants to be able to speak with his teammates in Spanish. And just mentioning Austin Nola off the top and like wanting to get to work, like this is a guy that seems to be about his business and doesn't seem to be an accident that he's had the success that he's had.
Yeah, that's really cool that he was able to, you know, look at when you start hearing those rumors or somebody gives you a call from the organization and says, hey, this is, looks like it's going to happen. Guys do one of two things. Either A, they go, whatever, and they kind of, you know, go about their business and wait for the deal. Or B, they start researching. They start calling. Hmm. And what do you know about this team? Who do you know? You know, what's going on? And he probably called Pham and Cronenworth right off the bat to try and get, what's the scouting report? What's really going on here? And he's usually not a guy of many words unless he's on one of his, you know, video game Twitch things. he was verbose by what I've heard, you know, Blake Snellstander. So he's obviously excited to be in San Diego.
Well, and he mentioned, it sounded like Tommy Pham reached out to him to let him know that there was interest. It sounded like Preller had spoken to Pham before the deal about Snell. And I think he said he'd heard from Manny Machado and somebody else as well. But he also said he was surprised. It's obviously they're in a different world and a different place, and who knows what they're listening to and paying attention to. Because he did say that he was surprised, yet, you know, there were guys that obviously had kind of hit him up and reached out. And there was the report from a month or so back that he was available. But, you know, who knows from the standpoint of the athlete themselves, like how much they're paying attention to the possibilities, because, you know, I'm sure you hear these things all the time and it doesn't always lead to something, but in this case it did. And, just makes,
and if you're playing for the Rays, you're always on the trade block. Yeah, just assume that.
That's true. On that note, Preller was asked about making deals with Tampa because, as he says, he's lined up with them a number of times, and this is what, the third just in the last year or so, because of the Pham Cronenworth deal, Emilio Pagan deal, and now this one for Blake Snell. And as you mentioned, like Tampa's, they're always looking to make deals. You know, they have the track record of selling high, not holding on to guys too long, and also shedding payroll. And that plays right into the hands of AJ Preller. Am I mistaken on that? It seems like it's a match made in heaven from that standpoint, at least for AJ.
Well, what we've seen with the Rays is their front office is really, really good. Even when Friedman was there, I mean, they were astute. They knew what they were doing. I think AJ Preller is one of the few GMs who's not scared at this point to deal with the Rays, because he's fleeced so many teams, just like Tampa Bay has, that they can kind of look at each other and like, all right, this is the worthy adversary. Mm-hmm. We're not going to try and screw you over like we screw everybody else over. Let's try and do something that's really going to be mutually beneficial. Mm-hmm. That really seems like that's what's happened with all the deals that they have made, is it's really helped both sides. So AJ might be on that very short list of GMs who can actually hang with the Tampa Bay front office and not get his head handed to him every time they throw a deal together.
And he discussed that very topic with reporters.
I think the thing with Tampa, and just to, you know, generally, you have to have, you know, a lot of times you have to have a piece that they want, you know, and that they see value. And if you have the piece that the other team really likes, you have a chance to line up. I think, you know, I think specifically with Tampa Bay, I think the conversations, you know, it's, I think both teams understand you got to give up value to get value. So, you know, we lined up last year a couple different times, you know, Pagan for Margot. You know, and then the deal with Tommy and Jay Cronenworth. You know, I think both teams, like, one, have talent in their organizations, and I think both teams are, like, very definitive and know what they want to do, and, you know, have shown an ability, you know, they're not really scared to make trades. So I think when and understand you're not really trying to pull one over on the other side. You know, at the end of the day, like, we expect our guys to go there and be successful. And, you know, I think if you get what you want in the deal, you know, I think ultimately that's all we're really looking for. And I think, you know, Eric and that group over there, they understand that. So that's probably why we've lined up on some deals here in the last few years.
That was kind of a cool note from Preller. Like, we want this to be mutually beneficial. I'm sure there are some deals, you know, James Shields, Fernando Tatis Jr., where you know, you feel like we could actually win this thing by a wide margin. And the other team might think that we're giving them something that is going to benefit them for a while. And maybe they did at the time. But I'm sure there are instances where you're like, oh yeah, we really have a chance to win this deal. That's not always the case. The Rays are looking for a specific thing. The Padres are looking for a specific thing. They want to see their guys go have success wherever they end up. And this feels like one of those instances.
Yeah, it's also, I think, a feather in the cap of the organization. I think AJ looks at it this way. If our guys go somewhere and do well, and the player that we get from them comes here and does well, we win because we got a guy that we needed. And we also win again because it shows that we have a good player development system. And if you're going to make a deal with us, you know you're going to get a quality player back because we are training our guys and teaching them to be legitimate Major League Baseball players. And that, I think, just opens up more avenues for you to trade with other teams because they see – boy, the last four times the Padres have made a deal with somebody, it's turned out that that player has turned into a really good ball player. So we got to go get that system. Yeah, we have to give up something now to get it, but they're doing something over there we got to tap into.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I would think it enhances your leverage and bargaining power when you do have that track record of, hey, we sent that guy away and look what he's doing. You know, we've got quality coming out of our system and this is your opportunity to tap into that. And the Rays have taken them up on the offer a number of instances, and another good example this week. And, you know, there was obviously so much anticipation with Patino, just as there is with Mackenzie Gore. It's funny, Preller was asked about Mackenzie Gore, like, which one of the GMs asked about him most? And he's like, yeah, Gore comes up all the time. And you get the sense that he doesn't stay in the conversation for very long. But Patino was, you know, not quite as untouchable, obviously, as Mackenzie Gore. But, you know, he was a prized possession of this organization and probably took a lot for Preller to feel comfortable giving him up. But with both these deals, the great part is, and it's something that we've discussed, just like with Clevinger, more so than Clevinger, these guys aren't going anywhere. I mean, they've got both Darvish and Snell through 2023. And so these aren't rentals. And I think that's what a lot of fans feared, is if they're buyers at a trade deadline or, you know, at any point in the year, mortgaging their future for a shot at a pennant run. And this ain't that, you know?
No, what you got is, for the grand total of $98 million, you got 3 years of Blake Snell, ace, and 3 years of Yu Darvish, ace, which basically says if you're doing that, you take the whole thing over. If you're doing 6 year, $98 million deal, what one ace would that get you? That's not getting you Trevor Bauer. Even 3 years of 3 years of $59 million, which you're going to have to give Darvish, that's not getting you Trevor Bauer.
Yeah.
So they got all that with contracts that are already, guys are happy with and already established. And it's that's the crazy part to me that I just can't really wrap my brain around. I know $98 million bucks is a lot of cash. In baseball parlance, for players like that, that is a pittance. That is nothing. Because you're getting a lefty and a righty at the top of your rotation or at the top of their games. Mm-hmm. And for the same amount of money that you would have to give Clayton Kershaw for 2.5 years or Walker Buehler for maybe 3 years. And you get both of these guys. It's incredible what they're able to do with this. And they still have flexibility now. I mean, I haven't seen the number on Ha-Seong Kim yet, but it can't be more than, you know, $20 million bucks for the posting fee for him. And so they still have flexibility to be able to go out and get Fernando Tatis Jr. a big extension. It's insane what they're able to do right now because of the types of pieces they added at the price points they added them at. That's the thing that I keep just kind of going, how in the hell did they pull this off?
Yeah, and I think it was John Heyman that said they got $3 million back from the Cubs, you know, on top of that.
Oh, it basically takes care of Caratini's contract. And by the way, don't overlook Victor Caratini in all of this.
Sure.
He's Yu Darvish is personal catcher. I mean, here the phrase personal catcher a lot. He used to be thrown around with Greg Maddux quite a bit. But this is a guy who's caught more innings from Yu Darvish than anybody else. Also, he's not bad offensively. He's a switch hitting catcher, so he gives a little bit of flexibility if Austin Nolan needs a day off or Luis Camposano was dinged up or, you know, going to a trial or something like that. You get this guy who can come in and he can hit. He's not going to be a liability in the lineup. And I think that's a problem that a lot of people, Padres fans, had when they start thinking about the catcher position. You're like, we've seen Austin Hedges here for God knows how long. You're like, okay, with the pitcher in the lineup, we now have two automatic outs. And you can't have that if you're going to compete, especially in the National League West with teams like the Dodgers. He can handle the bat, so he's not a liability when he's going in there every fifth day or whatever it is to catch Darvish either. He's a nice addition to this whole thing.
Did you expect to see a Padres team in 2021 that was top five in payroll? Because that's where they're projected by SpotTrack right now.
No, I never thought at any point would I ever see a Padres team in the top 10. You kind of hope for that. Of course, you also never think we saw the Astros up there. And sure enough, you know, they did it. Man, you know what it's got to be is it's the brown uniforms. I mean, they're making so much cash off the brown uniforms. That's the only thing I can think of right now. That's how they're able to do all this.
Well, and not to mention whenever they're able to have fans. I mean, how close to capacity are they going to be?
Oh, it's going to be constant. That's why my wife is the greatest wife of all time when she got us season tickets for a birthday present. This is the perfect time to be a Padre fan and be able to go out and go to the ballpark. Like, she hears me sitting around here talking about and doing the podcast and frothing at the mouth of baseball. And she's like, let's go. So it's going to be absolutely incredible to be. I've been to Petco Park during the playoffs, and it's going to be a playoff atmosphere every single night. And that's going, I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it. It's going to be so freaking cool.
Here's what Preller had to say, just kind of on the note that we were discussing. Yeah, it might hurt to give up minor leaguers, but it's a lot more palatable when you get studs for a number of years the way they are with Snell and Darvish.
Yeah, I think that's been something that's been very important for us, both at the deadline and, you know, and here in this offseason is, you know, if we're going to go and look to move quality, talented prospects, younger players, et cetera, you know, there may be times where you want the, you know, the short-term fit and the rental fit and, you know, but in general, I think most of these deals, I mean, the attractive part for us is they're players that fit in both the short and long-term. So, you know, I think for us, you know, we looked at the Clevinger deal or the Nola deal this at the deadline, and then obviously these deals, you're talking about players that you have for 3 years, and this isn't just a, you know, one pennant race or 2 months and move on. I think if we're going to trade, you know, quality young talent, it was somebody that we look at and we have for 3 years and we can build with, or 5 years, et cetera. And I think that was definitely part of the attractiveness to us of the trade. And I think a reason why we ultimately end up doing it.
Just makes it all that much more of a no-brainer. You know, when you can get that talent and get it for a number of years the way they did, you got to do it. Let's Preller also, he loves making deals for the Rangers, guys. We've talked about it before with Profar. Who else? I know there's other
Mitch examples. Moreland, he was with Inwood, Texas.
Jace Tingler.
Yep, if I get the skipper from Texas. He does like guys that he knows that he has dealt with before from that Rangers system.
And he was asked about that, just the comfort level of making a trade like he did for Yu Darvish. And again, I think part of the comfort level is not having to give up maybe as much as you'd expect for a player of Yu Darvish's character. But the fact that they have that history together, he knows his makeup, just makes him more comfortable pulling the trigger on a trade like that. And he touched on his relationship with Darvish.
Yeah, I just had a chance to talk to him. It was fun getting back on the phone and FaceTiming with him and just seeing again, like he's matured a lot. I mean, he's got a family and kids, and you know, again, like I think when I was scouting Darvish personally, and you know, he was, you know, when he was over in Texas, he was, you know, 24, 25, and he came over at 26 years old, and now at 34 years old, he's at a different phase in his life. But just catching up. And, you know, just, again, I think from that standpoint, I think it's going to be fun to watch him pitch. That's the best part of what we're seeing him pitch every 5 days. And he can do a lot with the baseball. He's extremely talented. you know, it's as good a combination of power, finesse, multiple pitches. You know, as really anybody in the game. His last, you know, last season and a half has been as productive as anybody in the game, and he's a force. So I think getting back on the phone with him, catching up for a few minutes, really looking forward to being around him every single day again here when we get to Arizona.
I think it was Alex Fast on Twitter who posted an overlay of every pitch, every type of pitch that Darvish threw last year, and there was like 11 of them.
Oh, yeah. What's crazy is they all come from the same arm tunnel, with the same arm speed, with the same – it's his ability to manipulate the baseball is nuts. And it's not just – like Zach Davies, we saw, he'll throw his changeup and his fastball to the same arm slot. The fastball is going 89. The changeup is at 81. Yu Darvish is throwing 97, and then he throws a Bugs Bunny curveball, and then he throws a slider, and then he throws a cutter, and then he throws a changeup, and you have no idea where the ball is going at what velocity. It's crazy just what this guy is able to do with the ball in his hands. It almost reminds me, and I don't throw this around lightly, it's almost like the number of pitches that Greg Maddux had. I remember talking to Maddux when he was with the Padres at that short time. Like, how many pitches do you throw? Is he like, I don't even know. I can't even count. Because his fastball, he throws six different kinds of fastballs. Not six different grips. It's just six different. The ball moves differently. He can move it up. He can move it in. He can move it down. He can move it out. He can move it where he make it just flat out straight and get the spin rate at the top of the zone. That's kind of like Yu Darvish. He throws the same pitch four different ways. And that just gives you so many different weapons. Need a little bit extra tilt on this guy because you know a fish on the slider going down and away. He's got it. Need a little extra velocity up in the zone, a little extra spin rate because you know this guy can't quite handle the fastball in. He's got that. He's got every shot in the bag he's got. And it's crazy to watch what he's able to do with the baseball.
So, and that makes sense. It makes sense that Preller would want to include his catcher in a deal like that because that would, I would think, require a learning curve for a backstop. Now, we've seen that Austin Nola is up to the task. He did a fantastic job once he arrived, getting a feel for the guys on the Padres staff. But if you have a chance to include a guy like Caratini in the deal and keep that comfort level with you, why not?
Not just knowing how the ball moves, but also even more important, what he likes to throw in any given situation. Because you've got that many different offerings. Caratini's going to know through the bullpen session that day, through a couple of innings, what you feeling good with today, what you want to do with this pitch, with his out pitch against left-handed pitching. Because it's going to change game to game with a guy like that. So Caratini's going to already know, hey, I know he's got this working today. He's going to throw this to right-handers on 1-2 counts. He's already going to have that in the back of his head. It's going to be – and that comfort level when you can work with someone like that, it makes it you that much more successful.
So we went into 2020 and spring training, you know, talking about opening day starters and who's going to crack the rotation and all the competition, when we're going to see the young guys. And it's even more so this year. I mean – You pencil in Snell, you pencil in Lamet as long as he's healthy, and Preller spoke about him, and I know this is a source of concern for Padres fans, but Preller's saying, look, until we see him 5 days or once every 5 days in spring training and beyond, you know, we won't know for sure. But you pencil in Lamet as long as he's healthy. Paddock, you assume, and then there's that fifth spot. Is Gore ready? Is it Morejon, Weathers, one of those type of guys? Joey Lucchese's still around, but there are just so many options and far fewer question marks than there even were 2 years ago when we were like, okay, Lauer, Lucchese, Paddock, who's this Nick Margavich's guy? Bullpen days? Sure, why not? It's just a completely different game. And that's something that Preller is obviously excited about. How many times have we joked around about depth and quality? They seem to have that now. And as we learned in October, especially with what happened in the last week and a half of the regular season with Clevinger and Lamet, like you can't have enough of these guys. And you said it earlier, and Preller said it, like we want to have 10 starting caliber type pitchers.
Oh yeah, and they might have that much. They might end up with that kind of depth. That's what's stupid about this. And I did, let's not overlook Ha-Seong Kim here either, because hopefully we get the DH back in the National League, right? We've kind of established that. The Padres have their entire starting lineup coming back. All 8 position players are back, which is kind of unheard of for a team that good to get everybody coming back. It's like a college football team that had nothing but underclassmen and went to the National Football Playoff and then got their heads kicked in by Clemson because Trevor Lawrence is a different beast. But you know they're coming back next year and they're going to have a shot at it, right?
Yeah.
They get everybody. And then they add this guy, dude, who hit 30 bombs in the KBO, who can play, he's the shortstop by trade, but can play third base and can play in the outfield. So now, I mean, my 12-year-old son was asking me, why'd they go out and get someone like that if he's a shortstop or a third baseman when they got Tatis and Machado? Said, well, if they're going to have the DH, they do what we saw them actually do a few times last year. All right, hey, Kim, you got shortstop today. Tatis, you're DHing to give your body a little break. Hey, Manny, you're DHing. Hey, Kim, you're playing third base today, so Manny can give his body a little break. Hey, you guys, Manny and Fernando, you guys are out in the field. Hey, Kim, you're DHing today to give your body a little break. Hey, Tommy Pham, need a little rest day? All right, you're going to DH. Hey, Kim, you're in left field today. So they give you so much flexibility with a guy who can swing the bat too. Like, that's the bench piece that they were looking at. And we had no idea. We're thinking, okay, who around here? Can they bring back Mitch Moreland? Can they bring back Greg Garcia? They're going to go out and get a 25-year-old shortstop who has that kind of pop in the KBO, also hit 306. Like, they're playing chess while the rest of us are playing checkers. It's nuts.
And it sounds like, just from reading up on Kim, it sounds like they're getting him on a pretty favorable deal.
Yes.
He was... I think it was a Fangraphs piece that said, like, basically anything under 50 is a steal. And I'm assuming this is a longer term type contract, but I mean, they even threw out there like the potential of $100 million deal for this guy. Nothing's official yet. I don't believe seen terms of the deal, anything too clear. So we don't know for sure, but it sounds like they're getting him on a pretty favorable deal. And interesting that he would pick the Padres, since there isn't that kind of clear spot for him. But AJ Casfield, a great point on Twitter, like, this is another one of those lessons from the Dodgers. You just get good players. You just go out and you get more good players. And it's one of those things we always talk about, like with the NFL draft and the NBA draft, especially teams that aren't very good. Like, do you draft for need or do you draft the best player available? And this is Preller not worrying too much about need. It's just bringing in more talent and letting the competitions, letting the lineups sort itself out. But you're always better off having more talent. And that's what Kim is. And maybe there's some redundancy between he and Jake Cronenworth, but it gives you an insurance plan if say Cronenworth comes back and struggles, or say there's an injury, or like you said, just being able to manipulate the lineup one day to the next, give guys some rest coming off a short season, now hopefully going into a longer year. We've seen injuries crop up throughout the season with Hosmer and with Tommy Pham. It just gives them those insurance policies, but more than anything, just like another good baseball player. And
it's like you said earlier, you can't have too many of those. Need Mookie Betts to be great?
Yeah.
No. Was it great that they had him? Yeah. I mean, they had Cody Bellinger, Jock Peterson, AJ Pollock, and Chris Taylor, who could all handle the outfield. Okay. So they hang on to all those guys, and then they go and get Mookie Betts. And so you got Mookie. And now the other guys are like, okay, well, hey, Taylor can also play the infield. It's going to keep his bat around. Well, Peterson, we're going to have a DH. We can move him around and keep that big left-handed thump in there. And he can be, a guy who can spell you for a few innings. You got Pollock, who's like the right-handed version of Peterson with much higher OBP, but not quite as much pop. It gives you so much more flexibility when you have just that many good players. You don't have to worry about, this guy's down today. I remember when the Padres had Adrian Gonzalez, and that's it. and that's it. Like, if he needed a day off, you're like, well, if we don't get no hit today, it'll be a victory. Now it's like, oh, hey, you get 3 of you dudes, entire left side of the field, y'all can take a day off today to get a blow, because we're going to lose something, because you guys are all like Hall of Fame caliber talents, but we're still going to be probably better than the guys we're playing because we've got that kind of depth. That's I've never seen that in San Diego before.
And Preller hasn't had a chance to discuss Ha-Seong Kim with us because the deal isn't official yet. So he was not part of the conversation when we heard from him earlier this week. Here's what both Snell and Preller had to say about the depth, just in terms of the pitching staff and all the talent now in their starting rotation.
You know, it's going to be competitive. That's the best thing about when you have a lot of talent. The guys are going to compete within, you know, the group that we have right there. The young guys are going to get a lot better. I'm hoping they're guys that, you know, ask questions, want to learn, and, you know, want to put that work forward. So I'm excited, you know, just to meet everybody, start to, you know, feel it out, see how guys act and what their personalities are like. But I know Clevinger a good amount, so I'm excited about that. I'm pumped for him to get healthy and be back in the following season. But I mean, when you look at this lineup and you look at the rotation they put together and that's going to be put together when Clev gets back, I mean, it's hard not to be excited, man. This team is lights out. So it's time for us, you know, put the work in and make this happen because we have the team to do it.
I think, you know, to me, it's not going to fall on any one guy. I think that's what we've tried to create is a staff that, you know, it's not just even five deep. I think we want to look up and we're 8, 9, 10 deep of real major league starters. We've talked about a lot. You can never have enough, you know, true, you know, front of the rotation, you know, type major league starters. We feel like we have a bunch now on our staff, some that have been established at the major league level, you know, like Darvish and Snell, some that, you know, we feel like in the next, you know, couple months and years are going to continue to step up. But, you know, I think what we've tried to do is every single day we have somebody that we feel like could be that ace type. So whether it's the Nelson Lamet or Chris Paddock or, you know, you Darvish or Blake Snell and on, that's what we're looking for. And I think we're looking to have a situation where it doesn't really fall on any one individual to have to, you know, carry a disproportionate share of the load. And hopefully we're closer to doing that with these two trades.
Derek, who's the opening day starter?
Yes.
Good answer.
It's
better than no. It's better than existential dread.
You got basically what you're playing with. I mean, if we're in Vegas, you got three aces, and I will. And if Paddock is a number two and Mackenzie Gore is a number two, you got a full house. So you got aces over kings, and very few, you know, hands are going to beat you in that situation.
That's true.
So yeah, I mean, shoot. Roll the dice, man. I mean, my guess right now, and this is just if I put a gun to my head and say pick one, I would say you Darvish, simply because of the relationship that Jason AJ have with you from the time in Texas. He's a more established, older guy. That would be my guess. But again, it's all going to depend on, you know, how guys are doing and feeling in spring training. But if it's you Darvish, and then if Blake Snell is your number two starter, you're doing pretty well for yourself. If Blake Snell is your number three starter because Denelson Lamet somehow sneaks ahead of him, you're doing damn well for yourself. If Denelson Lamet is your number three starter after being on the all MLB second team last year, you are rejoicing from the top of the Western Metal Supply building.
You know, I don't know how much the numbers, you know, in terms of who's assigned to what in the rotation, like, matter once you get to like April and July and August. Obviously they matter in like late September and October. And on opening day, I would like to see if Denelson Lamet is healthy after the season he had, kind of being in the shadow of Chris Paddock in 2019 and going into 2020. I think that'd be pretty cool if they gave him the benefit of the doubt and said, "You two new guys are great. We love you. Glad you're part of the squad, and can't wait to see what you guys can do, and hopefully contribute to a World Series run in October. And obviously, you'll be around for some significant moments." But we're going to give the nod to the guy that had the breakout season, who's been part of the club.
I'm good with that. I'm good with all that. You know, I think looking at the personalities of the guys, I think Darvish would be okay with that. I think Snell might make him a little bit ornery, which is good. I like an ornery Blake Snell because that means he's going to be an even better Blake Snell.
And Paddock, I would love to get, you know, a penny for Chris Paddock's thoughts right now. I don't think we've heard from him, or I haven't seen any reaction on social media from him. I'm sure he's fired up about the team continuing to improve, but
just ask his brother.
We could ask Michael, but from opening day started to the struggles he had, and now seeing the team load up and him no longer kind of being in the conversation for that, like, opening day mix. Maybe he proves us wrong and sets the world on fire in spring training, but obviously has some work to do, but as Preller said earlier this offseason, they're confident that he can kind of regain his form. Last topic from Snell and Preller, the inevitable Kevin Cash question.
Yeah, we knew this was coming.
Came a few times. It's funny. He was asked, this isn't so much about that incident. He did talk about this more so about the chance to pitch deeper into games, see the rotation the third time through. And somebody's asked, how often does he think about it? He's like, I think about it often, mostly because people are constantly asking me about it. And very classy in his response. Like, obviously it was difficult for him, but he has a lot of respect for Kevin Cash, considers him a great manager, and he's a reason why, big reason why they got to where they did in the World Series, but obviously ended on a sour note for Blake Snell. That's the Rays MO though, right? Like, try and avoid having guys pitch the third time through, and taking a look at the numbers and the splits, and Snell has had a drop off in that third time through, and that's something going into 2021, a new situation with a team that's going to be more open to having those guys eat up innings and pushing them if they're looking good late into a start. He wants to prove that he's able to do that.
I'm very excited about it. I mean, I believe in myself a lot. I believe I put the work in to be able to face a lineup 3 to 4 times. And I'm excited about that. I know I'm going to get the opportunity here. I know they're going to, trust me and let me go. But I know to start the season as well, I'm going to be building my arm up. And once I get to the point where, I'm built and I'm comfortable and I'm ready to go, that's when I really start to, push deep into ball games. But I mean, just knowing myself and what I've done, my whole career, I got to be smart with knowing that, I got to build. And, it might take a little while to get, built to where I want to be. It might take, spring training and then maybe the first 5 starts, I'm 5-6 innings. But I know after that, I'm going to start really pushing it. And I know with how, I feel and health-wise, I feel really good. So hopefully from that point on, I could really, go 8-9 and start to really challenge myself and see how good I really am and what I can do when I, got to see these guys 3-4 times.
Yeah, I think a lot of that will depend on Blake, and kind of, where he's at. I think from our standpoint, again, I in general, like throughout the organization, we try not to put limitations on guys. I think the players tell you where they're at from a, how well they prepare, how well they're, how efficient they are, how well they're performing. And, again, like you don't really know what somebody's capable of. I think, we've always talked about that here. Don Welke, is behind the scenes here, was a big part of this thing. And he always used to talk about that. You don't want to limit anybody. You're not really sure what guys are capable of. And I think with Blake, he's an extreme talent. He's a guy that, obviously, has been the best pitcher in the game with the Cy Young in 2018. I think everybody saw what he did in the World Series. So when you have a talent like that and a competitor like that, I think we're going to be open-minded to all kinds of different possibilities with him. I think we're going to be smart and we're going to challenge him. And ultimately, if he's prepared and he's able to handle, what we put in front of him, I think in terms of how many innings and how deep he goes and all that, I think that'll take care of itself.
I love that. Don't limit guys. See what they can do. Give them a chance to be great. I'm a fan of that approach.
They just might surprise you. Human beings just might surprise you more than spreadsheets.
By and large, I'm not a fan of spreadsheets, but I am a fan of the human spirit and the desire to achieve and to be great. And, why not give these guys an opportunity to do that? And we'll see as the season goes. We'll see how Snell does once, he's built up enough to be in that position. But it's nice to know that the Padres at least have that outlook and that approach. And because game 6 was just a bummer. I mean, that was a drag. And the fact that it did not work out. It'd be one thing if they had some relievers come in and shut the Dodgers down and force a game 7 that happened 3 weeks later because of Justin Turner's positive test. That would have been awesome. But it blew up in their faces. And man, it's a heck of a lot more fun to have your top dog, like to live or die with that guy. At least give him a shot. And it sounds like the Padres want to do that.
Yeah, guess what? You can't play game seven unless you win game six. That's one bit of math that the Rays did not look at. They look at every other number in there, but you can't win game seven if you don't get a chance to play game seven because you lost game six because you took your ace out way too early.
Yeah. Well, this was fun to finally do. Any final thoughts on 2020 on the flurry of deals? I'm glad you brought up Ha-Sung Kim. I figured we'd kind of save our thoughts on him for the end, but I'm glad you interjected with him because it is easy to kind of overlook him. On one hand, it's not official yet. On the other hand, you know, there's a lot of details that need to be ironed out, and there's a lot that we have to learn about him. But that's just, you know, if the other two trades didn't happen, you know, that on itself would be very significant because it's just such an upgrade on that kind of, it might be unfair to call him a utility piece. I mean, that might be a little demeaning to his ability and his potential, but he seems like the type of guy that can slide into that type of role. And if what we've seen from him in the KBO is any indication, the fact that he is only 25 years old, that's a big get. Again, considering how highly thought of he was on this year's free agent market, and
looks, you know, like what he is?
Padres going to get him.
You know what he is, Jonah? He's a baseball player. That's what he is. Put him out there, he'll play baseball. He'll figure it out.
Can't have too many of those, right?
No, exactly. That's exactly the blueprint that they're going with, you know? Can you have enough of anything? No. No, you can't. I remember talking to Tom Telesco a while back, and talking about the draft. He said, if you've got a guy that you love, you take him regardless of position. He said, case in point, a few years back, we had, you know, Marvin Harrison. We didn't need a wide receiver. We took Reggie Wayne anyway because he was there. And it worked out pretty well for everybody because we won a Super Bowl with him. And that's exactly what it does. If you've got a guy who you think is a generational guy, the Packers liked Aaron Rodgers a lot. They didn't need a quarterback at the time. They went ahead and grabbed him anyway. And it worked out pretty well for them. They won a Super Bowl with Aaron Rodgers, who's going to the Hall of Fame. So you get as much talent in there as you possibly can and then let it sort itself out.
Hey, the Eagles have Carson Wentz, but you know what? You go out and draft Jalen Hurts too, and you never know when you're going to need that guy.
Yeah, but you didn't need a running back.
More talent in the QB room. I can't believe.
Yeah, but again, he should be in the running back room.
I can't believe.
Because I've seen him throw the football, and it's not pretty.
He's had some good moments, but I'm blown away.
Ryan Leaf had some good moments.
That trade has kind of worked out. Yeah, it's been cool to see the talent in this organization grow, and now they're projected at like mid 90s or so in terms of the win total. Granted, in a 160 game season, who knows what we'll get? But you know, we're going into last year thinking, can they get to 81 and 81? Is that what Ron Fowler wants? Is that the benchmark that will keep heads from rolling? And now we're talking about the real potential of mid 90s. You know, in terms of a win total, right up there with the Dodgers and kind of the WAR projections, betting odds in some places. I think William Hill had them third. Somebody else might have had them second. A lot has changed in just about two short years.
130 wins. 130 and 32 are the seasons of failure.
Heads will roll. Well, I'm glad we finally were able to do this. Fun to chat about these guys and to do one last pod in 2020 and what has been a trying year in a number of ways. I mean, how many episodes were spent trying to figure out if there was going to be a season, how it would look and how the money would work. And I'm glad that's behind us at least for another year before the bargaining resumes. But the excitement that this organization has provided in 2020 in an otherwise kind of difficult year, and to just give everybody else a one last sudden jolt before we flip the calendar, pretty darn exciting.
It's been a pleasure doing all these with you, man. And it's, I think we're going to hit like number 100 early next year, right?
I think this is 99, crazy enough. Yeah, we had joked about getting number 100 in time for New Year's Eve. We'll settle for number 99 unless Fernando Tatis Jr. signs a lengthy contract later this evening, and then we have another.
If that happens, we'll be partying like it's 99. I'll tell you that.
But this will be episode number 99. So hitting the century mark as we turn the calendar to 2021. And so that'll be fun and great having everybody along for the ride. It's always fun when you have like the episode after they beat the Cardinals did great numbers, and that's always really cool to see. It's also really cool to have people, even like right after the Blake Snell news broke, like, hey, are we getting an emergency pod tonight? Or a couple of days later, like, hey guys, what are you doing? We need the emergency pod. Great to know that you guys are listening, that you're here for the content, that you seem to enjoy and appreciate what we put out. And we've certainly had a blast doing it.
Everyone, it's going to be a good year. As my wife and I like to say, because we're both big Ron White fans. It's going to be a good day, Tater.
21. And you guys got big plans, Tater. What is it? Shrimp Alfredo? What is it? What's the plan tonight?
Lobster ravioli.
Lobster ravioli. Sorry. Had that wrong on both fronts. Lobster ravioli, a couple bottles of champagne.
You were there with the crustacean pasta of some kind. So
yeah. I knew it was somewhere in that neighborhood. Well, you guys have a great end of 2020 and beginning to 2021. And everybody listening as well. Again, thanks for being with us all year. Happy New Year, and excited to be with you to see whatever 2021 brings for the Padres. Thanks for listening.
Stay safe, everybody.